we are housebound, not through any sort of ailment, just because we are adhering to social distancing rules.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think we're just quite antisocial people in general, so it's not really had that much of an effect on our lives.
It's been fantastic.
No, we, I don't know, it's just kind of like a weird, like, merge of days. Like, you don't know what day it is, and you don't know what time it is, and kind of the only thing that breaks things up is just having food every so often, and then you go to sleep, and then you just,
Are you finding that you're on, like, prime snack mode now? I seem to be snacking tons.
Oh, God, yeah, it's difficult, isn't it?
I think, I can't keep up with it.
We tend to, so I usually do the food shop, and I tend to not buy snacks because we're not the sort of people that can, like, have snacks in a cupboard and kind of eat them at a normal rate. It's kind of like everything goes kind of on the first night. Like, literally, whether it's one packet of biscuits or three or four, like, if it's there, it will go straight away. So I tend not to buy stuff, but we have, like, a shop really close to us, so we just kind of walk up there and get stuff as and when, but you're kind of not meant to do that now. So I've actually started sort of buying, you know, like, digestives and other naughty things.
Yeah, I'm really bad for that as well. It's Easter this week. It's Easter this weekend, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Good job we got them two bars of chocolate, aren't they?
Yeah.
Hey?
Are they egg-shaped bars of chocolate?
No, just chocolate. Easter's just chocolate, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, but there's something really satisfying about it being in an egg form, no?
I will melt it down and form it into the shape of an egg with my hands, and I will send you a picture.
That sounds messy. Oh.
Are you going to make it hollow as well? Because that would be impressive.
Yes, I will. Yes.
Some big promises are being made here.
So all you need to do, surely, to make it hollow is mould it onto a balloon and then put a tiny pin into the egg when it's dried to pop the balloon.
That's true. A bit like when you used to do, like, paper mache and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a paper mache egg made of chocolate, which is not paper mache at all. I might even try that myself. That sounds quite fun, actually. It's something to do, isn't it?
You do it then and then send me a picture instead.
Wait a minute. How have I got out of this? So I've started recording, by the way, just because I thought that was quite a fun point to start. But I'm trying to get better actually introducing a podcast, but I quite like it being quite random and spontaneous. And I feel it makes it much more natural and easier for people to talk. And that's the general gist everyone said so far. So actually on the other side of the interweb is Jimmy and Emily from Atticus.
Hello. Who,
if people don't know, check out their kit. It's fucking awesome. They've just released a load of new stuff and they've done it in a really clever way considering the situation, which I'm sure we're going to cover at some point later on. But the bit that I wanted to start with is like a bit about both of you. Like, where do you come from? What's your background? Who are you?
Who are we? Okay. Jimmy, you could start.
I'm Jimmy. I am in my mid-30s, which means that I'm at the point where I feel like I'm really old, but in reality, I'm actually still not that old. I have been doing this as a full-time job for 4 and a bit years. Atticus, that is.
Fucking hell, is it that long?
Not full time.
All right, three years. No, 3 years full time. Mm. Three?
Shit me.
Something like that. I can't remember. It's kind of like, you know how it goes, the lines blur.
We're in a post-COVID world now. Time means nothing.
But it's a while, yeah. We left London last October. To the northeast of England. Before Atticus, I had a career in an industry that I fell into and shouldn't have been in, and I was happy to get out of it as quick as possible. But taught me loads of skills which have been very useful for us setting up Atticus and the business side of it and all of that kind of the boring stuff, you know, the not interesting stuff. But as long as I can remember, I've always I like to be creative. I like to create things. I've always had an interest in photography and visuals. And it's always just been something that I've played around with and somehow got to a point where I've managed to turn it into a job and I guess a career.
And also you used to do silly triathlons and marathons and runs and everything as well, didn't you?
Yeah. That feels like a lifetime ago now, though. So I started off as a runner. I was obsessed with shorter distance, so like 5K stuff and trying to get as fast as possible. That then a good friend of mine challenged me. Actually, yeah, you know him, don't you, Mark? Scottish Mark.
Yeah. Scottish Mark.
A very competitive person, and one day was like, I bet I can beat you in a triathlon. And then we were like, all right, cool, let's do this triathlon thing, and went from not doing anything like that. I hadn't swam since I was in school, and then just going in full-on trying to be as competitive as possible. But then that snowballed. I did two, maybe three ultra marathons, a ton of shorter distance triathlons, all of which I was rubbish at because I absolutely despise swimming, and I would usually do one swim session about a week before the triathlon. But yeah, it was good fun, sort of.
Sort of. Is it type 2 fun?
Yeah. I did that thing where I got really excited. I had a full-time job and I did that thing where I was like, right, I'm going to train like I'm a professional. I was doing like 20, 25, 30 hours of training a week. And I'm sure you've experienced it. There's only so many week after week that you can do that before everything starts to fall apart. And I got to a point where I was just like, you know, maybe this is, you know, I'm not good enough to be a professional or even a semi-professional. What's the point in doing that amount of destruction? And that was the point that was actually just before I met you. And it was at the point where I was like, right, I'm going to get rid of data. I'm going to sack off running. I'm going to sack off swimming. I'm going to spend some more time riding my bike and just doing it for fun.
And then you still don't really do data, do you?
That's just because we don't ride anymore. That's why you're not seeing anything.
I dabble. I've actually only just recently started training again. And
I saw that.
It feels quite nice. It does feel good. I think the key is to find the right balance, because like where we are now, because it's so hilly, it's almost a case of going, right, we have to, if we don't train, we're not going to be able to enjoy the summer, because we'll go out on 20K rides and be in absolute holes. Like, you just can't escape climbs up here. So you need a level of fitness to actually be able to go out and do a nice, long, enjoyable ride without destroying yourself.
Mm. Yeah, but you're still equally, the way you're now living is probably one of the most beautiful places in the UK, from what I've experienced anyway.
It's magic, so
You're very lucky to be in that location, and it's a good motivation to make you to want to get a bit fitter, definitely.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man, for sure.
I still remember that bit when we went out on, and it was snowy. That's still like one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had.
It's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty special.
And we have to go in the winter then.
It's too cold. I come up in the summer. I'll only come up in the winter if you've got like, oh, hello.
Sorry.
I knocked it, sorry.
I'll only come up in the winter if you guys basically somehow make a log fire work on the back of a trailer of a bicycle.
Yeah, we need definitely some sort of portable heating system, don't we?
Yeah, because otherwise it's going to be, I mean, I can imagine, I was talking to Jess about it, and she was saying like, they're not, obviously not as north as you, Jess and George, but they were saying, the winter's been tough.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, because winter is always rubbish. I think if you're a cyclist, it just kind of gets you, especially because you just have this like, wow, amazing summer. You kind of riding all the time. There's always stuff to do. You can be very sort of spontaneous with it. You know, it's a nice day. You just kind of do something and then it turns into something quite epic. But winter, I think we moved up in October, so it was kind of like right smack at sort of the beginning of winter, and it was definitely an adjustment, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. It's just rubbish. I mean, in one sense, it was always going to be crap anyway. So, it, you know, we might as well have, it gave us time to kind of move into the house. And because we moved the business, it was kind of getting everything set up there. So we just sort of used the time for that instead. But yeah, it was very much a hibernation. That's what it felt like.
Well, we did, we do have some of the best gravel riding in the country.
Yeah, we did a lot more.
Like
of that,
pretty much on our door, front door. So it allows us, so, you know, if the weather's a bit, if it's wet or it's been icy, we can just get on the gravel where it's usually fine.
Yeah, it's a lot less exposed, isn't it, as well? Because that tends to be the main issue. So like where we went riding with you that time, Chris, the main issue with the cold, and so you get snow drifts and stuff because you're basically up in the North Pennines. It's just so exposed that it's really the wind chill that gets you and can sometimes make things quite dangerous at the extreme end. But yeah, it just makes it very unpleasant. Whereas a lot of the gravel tracks, so there's less altitude and there's sort of tree cover and all of that kind of thing. So everything's just a lot more tame in terms of temperature.
Yeah, definitely. So then what, tell me about you, Emily, like what's your background? Because I always find your background, I find Jimmy's background really interesting, but I find yours equally as interesting because it's quite different.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a funny one because usually I'm on the other end of this. So my background is in journalism. So I studied journalism at university and then went straight into a job at a national newspaper in London. So that's kind of where my background is. And then I've kind of taken that into Atticus with the, I guess, the social media and the sort of more marketing output side of it. So, you know, when we do stuff with you, I'm usually the one behind the camera sort of quizzing you about stuff that you've done. So it feels...
it's quite funny, isn't it?
Being in the opposite situation. But yeah... yeah, that's where I met Jimmy. We both kind of were down in London doing separate things, and kind of, I don't know, it kind of, we started Atticus kind of out of a want to just have stuff that was in our style. I think, you know, like with it, now there are a lot of sort of smaller boutique sort of cycling clothing brands, but like 5 years ago, there was obviously a lot less and it was more of a kind of case of, styles were limited and you were either kind of getting stuff that was very, very tame and bland in style but higher quality, or there was stuff that was well garish but just like quite shit. And there was kind of nothing as much that was in between. And I think, you know, cycling was obviously, it has in the last kind of decade had such a massive boom, and with it comes like lots of different subcultures. So for us it was kind of a desire to have stuff that fit our style sort of off the bike, and then that we could relate that to our cycling. So we kind of set that up in the background while both doing our full-time jobs. So I started off as a reporter and then moved quite quickly onto the production side. So I was a sub-editor, so it was my job to kind of, once the reporters have written up all of their stories, my job was to fact check and, you know, ultimately make thousands of words into sort of 70 words and tell the same story. And
that must be bloody hard in its own right.
Yeah, it's a skill. It kind of depends. Different newspapers have different styles. You know, some do very, very long columns, so there's not as much editing, whereas other newspapers have like lots and lots of different stories on a page. And the one that I was at, reporters weren't ever given a word count. They were just told to write what they think it deserves, and every reporter thinks that their piece should go on the front page, so they write loads. So you kind of have to read all of that, and you might be told that, you know, it's going into a column that's like a sort of single spread, or sometimes it's literally a sentence, you know. So it's kind of reading and digesting that information and sort of spinning it round into what can be a completely different written piece of content. But yeah, it was good fun. I think I've always been very interested in like English language and just sort of playing with words and that sort of thing, so I really loved it. I think the main issue there was because it was a daily paper, all of that sort of side of stuff's done at night. So at the age of kind of 20, I started doing all evenings and weekend shifts, which is very antisocial. Coming back to that antisocial side of ourselves, but Jimmy was working kind of 8 till 4, and then I started at about 4 and then worked till, you know, 12:30, 1 in the morning kind of thing. So we were a bit like ships passing in the night, weren't we, for a long time, and then set up Atticus and he sorry, go on.
I remember when I first met you guys, you were still doing those kind of shifts.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very odd thing. It went very fast, yeah, I think. I did that for maybe 2.5-3 years, and just the time just absolutely flew because nothing really broke it up. Everything was very, very similar. It was so work heavy, you know, and I didn't really get that much chance to socialize, so there wasn't that much stuff that kind of broke it up. And then once we started Atkins as well, it was just like so much work all the time. But at the time, it seemed like a good idea. But then, I think my views just kind of changed quite quickly. I think when I went into journalism, I decided I wanted to do it when I went to university, and kind of wasn't very knowledgeable on some things, wasn't very politically minded or anything like that. And I think just the more you do something like that, and the more you get into that world, especially obviously depending on where you work, if your views don't align with that place, it becomes more difficult to do. And I think, yeah, for me, I got very jaded with it very, very quickly, and it was very difficult, and I was giving a lot of my life to it and wasn't that happy with it. And at the same time, thankfully, Atticus was growing, and it was a chance to kind of use certain, like, you know, kind of media and communication skills in a much different way. And I think the other thing was we don't talk about it much, but, like, you know, I've always had a massive interest in kind of making clothes. Like, my mum always used to make all of her own clothes. She has like so many dress patterns that she used to make, and we always had a sewing machine in the house, and I used to like make little outfits for like teddy bears, you know, you can get those like Build-A-Bear bears, you can get like all the clothes for them, but they were like really expensive. So I remember like someone bought one for me for my birthday and bought me like a set of clothing, but I was like, I can never afford to like buy other stuff. So I used to like make like tiny little patterns, and then like sew like pajamas and that kind of thing for them. And I absolutely loved doing that. It was good because it was on a smaller scale, so you could kind of see it was a lot easier to do, basically. But I've always had an interest in that kind of thing.
So that kind of skill set, that's obviously something that's gone into Atticus now, especially with you having such a big involvement in the women's side of Kit, and really trying to push that and create something that's very unique and very tailored to, I guess, a very not broad spectrum of women in cycling as well. And I think that's, you know, do you think that kind of skill set has really helped you to understand what people actually want, men and women? I sort of talk more about the women's side of it, because I know you've done a lot of sort of pushing on that, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. You're right. It's gone into both sides of it. And I think it's something that we both had a massive hand in, really. I think that, you know, we're lucky enough that the factory we work with, they very much are, they're experts. They are the seamstresses and their pattern makers and all of that kind of thing. So when we go to them with ideas, they very much know how to put them into practice, and their contributions are really good as well. So it's very much like collaborative. But ultimately, I think that to be able to make good product, ultimately you have to know what is good yourself. I think you just have to have good taste, and you know that that is a design thing, but it's also a construction thing as well, you know, because there's a lot of noise and stuff, you know. For as many people want one type of thing, you'll have a group of people that want the opposite as well. And I think if you listen too much to feedback from other people, you can really be swamped by ideas that actually aren't that helpful. So I think you really have to be confident about what you want to create.
Definitely. And
stand by that. Would you say that's true? You have a lot of opinions on Kit. You have so many opinions. But that's what we put into it.
We've always worked on the basis that if it worked perfectly for us, there's plenty of other cyclists out there that it will work fantastic for as well.
At the end of the day, you test all the kit yourself as well, so it's quite a good statement to stick by that.
Yeah, you know, like we ride our bikes a lot, as many people like to joke about that. we've both been doing it for a good number of years now, so you know, like we have our own preferences, and that's a lot of the time what we work towards with our product development.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just on the basis that we'll, you know, like I was saying a second ago, you know, if if it works fantastic for us, then if 0.01% of all cyclists agree with us, then that's more than enough customers that we need.
Yeah, definitely. So I
was just going to say quickly on the women's side as well, like you hit on, we found that in a way that was almost, it was definitely as a project of its own, but it was almost a bigger challenge in some ways, because what we found is when we went to factories, you know, you kind of have to start with, like, you have to have a base to start with, you know, so they'll sort of present you with a jersey and you go, okay, we'll take this in, add this, do this, do this, do this. And whereas with the men's things, there were definitely things that needed to change, but the starting base, I would say, wasn't as far off as it was with the women's sort of standard factory models. And a lot of what we found was that actually they just tend to be men's cuts that were sized down a lot. So they had much skinnier hips, they had much broader shoulders. There wasn't any kind of bust allowance or waist allowance or anything like that. And it was definitely a recurring theme with kind of any new product that we started with. It was just a completely different process. So that had to be, that's something that has taken a while, I think, for us to kind of perfect and develop. But I think we're finally there with that. And now we use our own starting base and then go to the factory and say, okay, start from this, but change this. Because like basically with any new product that you make, because you're using new materials, it affects what the measurements are going to be, because some things stretch more than others, etc. So yeah, I think that was definitely another challenge, and one that's perhaps not present as much with the guys one, but yeah, it's just taken a lot of years to kind of to get used to. But I'm personally really, really happy with the results, and we get good feedback from people who ride it as well, so that's really nice.
That's the most important bit, that other people, I guess, when for you guys, what must be one of the most rewarding bits is when you hear people's feedbacks and opinions of the kit.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think especially, I mean, our jerseys, everyone, jerseys are jersey, but, you know, people are very complimentary about that, but bib shorts in particular, and everyone that wears them seems to be very happy with them, and, you know, the chamois pads and all of that kind of thing. Just, yeah, the reviews are good, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. So why Atticus? Why did you go for that as the name?
Well, so it took ages to think of a good name. And we went back and forth between a lot of things, and it was nearly called something else.
We had a lot of bad names.
We had a lot of bad names. I was reading something the other day that was talking about like brainstorming and how like nothing good is ever done during those kind of sessions. Like you're never going to hit upon like, yes, this is definitely the one. It's almost a way to kind of like spark an idea that you then go away and think about yourself. And I think that's kind of what happened for us. We'd have these sessions where we'd sit down and just throw a load of names out, like, oh, pineapple and blah. It was
that wasn't actually
that actually never was.
was it Catechus?
That was a close second, but we decided not to go for that one. No, I think it was just, so I can't remember how it started. I think, so Jimmy and I used to have bikes, and still do have bikes actually, by a brand, a steel frame builder called Moss. And I always thought the guy's name was Andy Moss, but it's actually not, it's Andy
Jones.
And I thought, oh, why is he called it Moss? And I remember asking him once, and it was some, what's the answer? It was something to do with the fact there was a hill called Moss Hill or something that was near his house that he liked to ride on, and also he liked the idea of like a rolling stone gathers no moss, and he was basically like, whatever, it almost didn't matter what the explanation was, but it was something that was really personal to him, and he was kind of saying, you know, like,
yeah, nice.
Something that's personal to you, because then whenever someone asks you, well, the idea is that you don't give a bloody long-winded speech, which you definitely don't. But you know what I mean? You almost don't have to have a justification for it, because it's just something that, as long as it sounds good and it's personal to you, then it doesn't matter. So we start thinking, okay, what's personal to us? And out of all of these ideas that kept coming, one of the things that stood out is when I first met Jimmy, we had a trip to Brighton one day, and we went through this old, like, indoor flea market thing in antique shop in mm-hmm. Brighton. And Jimmy was like obsessed with trying to find a dead moth in a in a frame. And I was like, this is weird. Yeah. He was just talking about how he really liked moths and the death's, what's it called? A hawk moth or something off Silence of the Lambs, Death's Head moth off Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is weird, but okay, cool. And that's just always something that stuck out to us. We were like, let's have a look at names of moths. Because this is the thing, you start looking at stuff in cycling, it's all velo this and, you know, hub that and blah, blah, blah. And it's like how do you almost need to not have anything to do with cycling in your name for it to be...
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, we started looking at names of moths, and one of them was Atticus Atlas. And yeah. The first kit that we did, you'll probably remember, was like the striped chest one. And we did it in the teal, and then we had it in the kind of goldeny colour as well. And then we had a look at the Atticus Atlas, or the Atlas moth, and it's the biggest moth in the world. It's got a striped body, and its wings are huge, and they look like snakes, and it's almost to kind of frighten off predators. And we're like, oh, that's pretty badass. And we quite like the name Atticus as well. So we were like, we can tie these things in together. That's how we settled on Atticus. And then
all of the first products were named after moths.
They were, yes. Yeah, there was the Death's Head cap, and there was the Dark Dagger vest, which is another type of moth. And
there's a couple of the names still around, isn't there?
Maybe.
I think our product code, internal product code.
Yeah, probably.
So all of our models have got AT codes. Our bib shorts to this day has still Luna. Got the moth from the very first ever set of shorts.
Yeah, which is the Luna moth.
So it's like 80 something something or other. Yeah. Luna 20 now.
Yeah.
For this year.
So the same with the logo as well. So one of Jimmy's friends does these like single line drawings where she basically starts and then doesn't take her pen off the page. And she was like, oh, let me draw you something. And she drew this figure, which was kind of like a little sort of insect with a striped body and these big wings. So we were like, yeah, that's it. That's what it's going to be. So some people think it's a signature, some people think it's a bee. But yeah, it's a kind of striped bodied moth, which is the Atticus moth.
That's cool. Loads of people always go, ask what the logo is. But I always think like logos should just be, it's whatever you want it to be, isn't it? It's your own. And the same thing, it's your own brand, your own identity. You can just do what the fuck you want. There's no restrictions to it. Like, the world is our oyster at the end of the day. It could be a freaking upside down octopus holding a giant stormtrooper. It could be what you wanted.
Well, I don't know. Stormtroopers would be copyrighted.
True. Give it a few years and they won't be. They'll be fine. But so then I the next thing I wanted to say is like, so obviously right now we're in a bit of a weird situation. We've chatted a bit before I started recording about this whole, you know, coronavirus, COVID-19, whatever you want to call it. And you guys obviously were intending on releasing your spring summer collection around this time this year. That's where it's traditionally been in the previous years. And obviously your kit's made in Italy. Italy is very much on lockdown at the moment. I believe it's still kind of on lockdown as well. How have you guys tackled that whole situation?
As best as we can. we'll talk about it purely from a business perspective. So forgetting about the fact that it's obviously been terrible for loads of communities and loads of people have died and loads of people are ill and probably loads more people are going to die. So just discount all of that.
Let's talk about it from a business side and how it's affected you in that way.
It's an absolute nightmare, but it is what it is. So we all of our stuff for this summer, we signed everything off about last October, November. Everything was meant to arrive middle of March. Ultimately, because we're a small business, we try and use cash as clever as we can. So we always get stuff as late as possible, meaning that we can pay for it as late as possible. We're not in the position that we've got huge bags of cash that we can just go, right, let's buy a summer's worth of stock, get it arrive in December and hold on to it for a quarter. It's not something we're in that luxury position to be able to do. So although we had everything planned, we knew exactly what we were going to order, what everything was going to look like, it wasn't due to arrive until the middle of March, which was going to give us our biggest period of time ever to actually produce all the content for it, which was 2 weeks.
Yeah, usually we turn things around in like 2 days, don't we? Yeah. From it landing to us doing mannequin shots and lifestyle shots and then getting together a group of people to do, like, you know, content for Instagram and all of that kind of stuff. We just always bank on that 2 days being good weather, and we were like, yes, we'll have a week this time. We are
two weeks,
wasn't it? Yeah, we were like, we are absolutely nailing it this year. And then
so we found out probably last week of March that it wasn't going that I think last week of March they officially shut down Italy completely.
Yeah. But before that, they'd been working with kind of like reduced hours. So, you know, I think it was kind of like some staff were at home and some staff were there. So they were kind of turning over slower than usual as well.
Yeah.
So we were meant to have, well, we were approaching this year anyway, in that the plan for this year was to have, we were going to restock all of the lines that we were restocking, which would have been beginning of April, and then adding some new limited edition stuff, and then we were going to add some new product lines every month thereafter for beginning of May, June, July and August. Some of them may still happen, but how it specifically works we don't actually know at this point. But ultimately, for the one which has just gone through at the beginning of April, everything that we were supposed to have at the middle of March is midway through production. So it's all been printed, it's all been cut. Some of it is part sewn, not all of it is actually finished. So there's actually only about a week's worth of work left for us to get all of the products we were meant to have for the middle of March. So we know it's coming. It's just a matter of needing a week or so once the factory's all open back up again in Northern Italy.
Yeah.
So what we decided to do was the only thing that we were able... So effectively our calendar for the year is just all over the place, but we were like, well, why don't we just explain it to everyone what's happening, let them, you know, the entire world's in a similar position, they kind of understand the challenges that everyone's going through, and effectively give people the opportunity to lock in their kit technically on what's a pre-order, even though we once upon a time said we'd never do a pre-order.
That's always been our thing.
On the basis that, yeah, you can lock in what you want. It's as if, in terms of like the terms and conditions with the customer, it's exactly the same. You know, when it arrives, you still get the same, you know, cancellation and returns rights as you would previously, etc., etc., etc. But ultimately, we technically don't know when it's going to arrive, but we made that, you know, clear to everyone as it was.
And I think how you guys did it was really, really good, because it was honest. And I think a lot of people will have appreciated that. And I don't know, but I'd like to think and hope that the support's been really good from that. And I would imagine it probably has been, in fact, because a lot of the new stuff is really, really, really nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think we're lucky in a sense that I think, you know, we've tried to build the brand. We've always wanted it to kind of it not just be us, it be bigger than us, but we do make an effort to kind of be faces to a brand, you know, like we're not a faceless brand. It is run by us, you know. It was kind of started in our kitchen, and I think people have seen us grow and it grow over the years. So I think maybe we're in a position, you know, if we were bigger, we would be able to do things in a different way. But because we are smaller, and, you know, thankfully, thank God, we don't have other staff to worry about at the moment. it means that we can kind of say, look, shit hit the fan a little bit and we're just going to have to adapt. Whereas perhaps if you were a bigger business, you would have to save face a little bit. I don't know whether that would like scare shareholders or anything like that. If you were saying like, oh God, things have massively not gone to plan. You know, I don't know if you'd be able to say that in that way. So in some ways, mm-hmm. I guess the fact that we are smaller and we are kind of able to move a lot quicker in some ways on executing things, it allowed us to kind of go, look, let's just stop what we were doing and actually just like talk to people like us. And yeah, I think we're really lucky that people responded to that. And yeah, for the fact that you're saying, hey, do you want to buy some kit? I don't know when it's going to turn up. Like it's been really, really good. So yeah, I guess if anyone's listening and has bought that,
thank you.
Yeah, it's great. I think another thing we were lucky about is that our samples turned up. So one piece of foresight we had this year, which we haven't done before, is actually ordering kit in mine and Jimmy's sizes earlier than we get the full batch. So again, it's not a massive layout of money, but it means that we can take pictures earlier. And thankfully that arrived for the first stuff. So it meant, because that's going to be a lot harder ask, is actually getting people to buy stuff when you can't even see pictures of it. So yeah, we've been lucky in some respects as well. And I think even as like a wider point, I think it's almost what you have to do at this point is remember the things that are going okay. And I guess just be thankful for them. Because mm-hmm. everyone will be affected by it in some way. And I think it's really, really easy to feel quite bogged down and scared and worried and, you know, fearful for the future. But I think you just have to kind of, I don't know, I guess roll with it the best you can and be thankful for the things that actually are going okay and the things that you do have.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation, definitely, for a lot of people, I think. But, you know, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel, but it is going to affect everyone to some way, shape or form. And I think people need to kind of be a bit more understanding and accepting of that. Mm. But I'm quite open about it. I had a family friend who passed away. But to be fair, he was very unwell anyway.
Right.
But the diagnosis is to do with COVID-19. And it's shit, like it's a tough thing to deal with, but you have to understand and accept that it's a thing that's going to affect a lot more people, that probably more people than you realize that you actually know. The business side of it is obviously incredibly stressful and tricky for anyone that has their own business. Completely get that, but I feel like the government has done as well as it can in trying to support as many people as it can, but obviously we're in it for the long run at the end of the day. Like no one really knows the answers or solutions or anything quite yet. It's still quite early doors, I think, but we'll get there. Like, you know, you just have to stay positive about it. So it is a fucking weird situation though. It is weird, isn't it?
It is odd, isn't it? Yeah. I think it'll be really interesting. I mean, when there, hopefully, you know, if and when there is a kind of return to normality, whatever normality ends up being after this, it'll be so interesting for people in the future, I guess, to look back on, you know, the podcasts and the YouTube videos and news reports and all the kind of thing to see what people were kind of going through. It's almost like when our sort of generation looks back on what people did to like come together during the war and that kind of thing, you know, people being redeployed and, you know, the fact that there's businesses that are, you know, now making masks and scrubs for NHS workers and that kind of thing. And I don't know, it's just interesting as a piece of history. It'll be very
definitely
odd and weird and interesting to look back on, I think, won't it?
Yeah, I think there's ways that you, like, I've tried to be, like, as productive as I can out of it. Like, I've had a lot of problems with my back, so I've been making a real point of spending time every day, very focused, like, probably about half an hour every day doing core and back strength training, and it's definitely helping. Like, there's ways you can be really productive with your time and with the situation you've dealt with. Anyway, let's stop talking about all that because I feel like it could go into a negative spiral, and I don't like it.
Absolutely.
I'm not in the mood for negative spirals because I've already had a rant about what I saw over the weekend. I don't want that. So I'm gonna I'm going to ask you guys, like, individually, what is your favourite bit of kit that you guys have released and sold?
Ooh.
Oh, gosh.
Let's have a think.
Do we have to have sold it?
Well, okay, your favourite bit of kit that you've had, yeah, like that you've not, I'm negating like the custom stuff, like the pure, yeah, your own product line.
Are you going to go first?
I stumped you guys.
No. it's really hard to pick out just one.
It's like trying to pick your favourite pet dog or child.
We don't have either of those, though.
No, but we have kit babies.
Which of our kit babies do we like the most? I think probably one of the pieces that I am proudest of would be the most recent collection that we've launched, the special edition stuff. So it's like the No Rules stuff with the kind of illustration on it. Mm-hmm. Mainly because it's the first sort of collection we've done where it's very kind of like matchy-matchy. Like, we've done matchy colours before, but it's kind of the biggest range of stuff that we've done like that. So we've got the cap and vest and base layer and jersey. And because it's the first time that I've done an illustration that we've put on kit, and that was a fun thing to do. And I don't know, it's cool, isn't it? Like, you know, I'm not going to claim that I have any sort of design background, and you as a designer listening, this is probably like, oh, bloody amateurs thinking that they know how to, but you know what I mean? Like, ultimately, I think that maybe that's what you get with kind of owning your own business. You get to kind of do anything you want, and if people like it, ultimately customers are the judge of it. And it's, it was really fun to do, and it was a kind of like creative side to me that I don't know. I really enjoyed doing it, and I feel like it's come out really well. Like, I'm really proud of it.
It's a really interesting use of technology as well, because so we used an iPad Pro and the pencil to draw. Well, I say we. You did designs, which is that, and there's also another one later in the year, which we haven't shown any. No one's seen yet, which is also another one that you've drawn, isn't it?
Yeah, and I enjoyed that.
That's really cool. Yeah. That little collection looks stunning. Like, it looks, I saw it and I was like, yeah, that's cool. Do you know, I don't mean this in like any sense of a like nasty way. I don't mean this horribly, but it feels like it's like help the brand grow up a bit more. Like, it's another positive step forward, because you're offering something that's very different to what you've done before.
Exactly. Like, and I mean, to be honest, as a brand, that's exactly what you have to do, you know, every single year. I mean, our summer is really our big launch every year. And every single year, you really have to do something new and something different, you know. And like, you know, the first year it was the stripe thing. The next year we released 10 designs all at once and it was kind of like a boom, here you are. And then last year we really toned it back, because we had some very like vibey designs in that collection. But it was kind of not a mishmash, but we were kind of like, we've done a load of stuff, and it was kind of just something to suit everyone's taste. We were really trying to, like, it was almost like research in a way, see what does well and see what doesn't do well. And actually it all did pretty well for us, but it was kind of just a like exploratory kind of year. And then last year we really kind of toned it back and we're like, okay, let's almost have like a core range of colors that we really sort of stick by, and then sort of build it up again with other stuff. And yeah, that's kind of what's come this year, is the kind of delve back into illustrations and designs and patterns in a different way now. And yeah, that's it's cool. I really like it. Yeah
I think it's I think it's really, it's nice, because it's very different from what you've done before, and it just shows that you guys are continually trying to, you know, do something a bit different and a bit more individual. And like you said, there's so many kit brands out there now. Everyone's shouting for the same, I guess, quadrant of people. realistically. I'm not saying I'm just generically putting all cyclists in that quadrant. There's so many brands shouting for what is really quite a niche part of outdoor sport. And to do something that stands out and is, you know, unique and very, you know, very beautiful as well is really, it's a real credit to you guys.
The good ones are always Emily's designs.
That's not true. That isn't true. No, it's very much 50-50, I would say.
I don't know.
Jimmy's just like, nah.
What's your favourite, Jimmy?
I don't know. I think I have a favourite.
Oh, just pick one.
But are we talking like product? Are we talking design or what?
Whatever you want, mate.
I love our bib shorts because they're so simple. I've always loved them. The Death's Head cap is absolutely legendary, which is the most expensive cycling hat of all time, which is a pain in the ass. But
it's also probably one of the rarest cycling caps of all time.
Oh yeah, it's like the unicorn of cycling caps.
As annoying as it is an unbelievably good hat or cap. Sorry.
Ooh. Yeah.
I think I'm a big fan of our jersey model. We've got some stuff coming. Again, we've got stuff coming this year, which I can't really talk about yet. which is probably what I would talk about if I could.
Yeah, that's fair.
A little bit cryptic there, but yeah.
Maybe it's one for a chat later in the year.
Ooh,
we could have a chat later in the year, definitely. So then, the other bit I wanted to cover is like obviously the custom side. Like we've worked together on Jesus Christ, several projects over the years now. I think
we have.
Yeah, like whether it's from the you know, for me, like my ultimate like favorite, it's slight vanity thing, but I've been so every skin suit that we've done for the 24, which by the way has been cancelled for 2020, sad news.
Yeah, makes
good
sense.
News, I never planned to do it in 2020 anyway, so it's fine. So every year we've done a different one every single year for 3 years on the trot, and I think the one that we did for 2019 was probably the smartest, not just on a design sense, but technically very, very clever, being the fact that it, you know, in a 24-hour time trial, you're riding a bike for 24 hours through the day, through the night, and the legs were reflective on it. And it worked so well. Really impressive. Really impressive. It was so cool. And that, like, for me, that one and the, but to be honest with you, of the projects that we've worked on together, the 24 skin suit from 2018 and 2019 are my, like, favorite projects. Because for me, they're, like, they mean a lot anyway. And the 2018 one, which is the blue stripe craziness, I just love because I think it's really baller and bold.
Yeah. It's so good, isn't it?
Great.
Yeah, it stands out so well and it's good fun. And then the 2019 one, which equally is really like a refined and very well thought through bit of kit, very simple and very clean, but super, you know, super great bit of kit. And it just, the whole look last year looked fucking bang on. It was bold, but good.
And you didn't leave us a choice because you ended up with a bike that was so loud. we couldn't go loud with kit.
Yeah, that bike. I've still got it sitting in the bedroom, and I look at it every day and I think, flipping hell, that is a loud bike. But yeah, I mean, like, and then you look at the custom side you've done. How's that been going with you guys? Because like a lot of brands are offering custom, and I know it's something that you guys were maybe a bit hesitant to do at first, but it definitely, like, you sort of worked with a couple of like smaller like cafes and bike shops, and then we did a couple through Jam as well. But how have you found that? Like, is it do you think there's really the appetite for custom at the moment? Is it a good thing? Like, I mean, personally, I think it's great that you guys are offering it.
Yeah, it's something that we've wanted to do for a good number of years, but it's such a different offering in the way that you do business than the brand side of stuff, that we wanted to spend enough time learning about businesses' needs or individuals' needs, to be able to then develop an offering that we offer more generally. Because like you said, we like London Velo is a great example. We started doing their kit, I think it's 3 years ago. The first jam kit was probably a similar number of years ago. So we'd worked with quite a lot of people before we even officially started offering it, which was ultimately an opportunity to understand how we would even go about doing it and what how people and businesses might want to want things to operate, essentially. You know, how do they actually want to pay for the products, and do they just deal with it all themselves and then come to us, or do they want us to be a lot more involved in the process of it, that, you know, those kind of things.
Such a massive learning curve, isn't it, especially as a small business as well.
And that's the thing, you can't underestimate how separate it has to exist, or it exists from the brand side of stuff. So we ultimately treat it as a standalone business that just functions in a completely different way and is separate, isolated in some ways from the Atticus brand. It's good. It's gone really well. Obviously, it's kind of quite stunting at the moment with the current situation. I think it's a side of the business that'll grow and do well. And the more we do, the more that we can offer within it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. What is there that's coming that you can give us a nugget of secretness to?
So we have a completely new jersey model, which is going to be coming out later this year.
Nice.
So it's new. It's got a completely different fabrics. It's a different cut. It's just everything about it is completely different and separate from the current foundation jersey. We then have another jersey top, completely different model, which is coming further down the year, that also has a number of associated products to it, which is actually, it's also a collaboration that we're doing later on in the year.
Nice. Okay, that's cool. So has one of these jerseys got a cape feature added into it?
A cape?
No, but if you want to develop a jersey with a cape, we can make it happen, Chris.
Yeah, why not? It'd be quite fun, wouldn't it? Because the reason why I said a cape was, you know how like Francis is obsessed with flappy gilets?
Yes.
You just put a cape on a jersey, it solves that problem.
Well, Emily's got really good sewing skills, so should we just sew a flappy gilet without a zip into a jersey?
Yeah, why not? and call it the Cade edition. But he can never wear it because he's never in his videos, so it has to be someone else wearing it all the time.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
So at the moment, Daisy.
Yeah.
So I mean, there you go. There's the next product launch. Exclusive. Okay. Cape jersey. I've got one more question. You can have that one, Jimmy, as well. That's a free one. I got one more question that I've asked everyone. Five tips of whatever you want. Hit me.
Five tips each.
Oh, you could do it combined because you're
two and a half.
You do two and a half each, yeah.
Of what?
Anything.
Five tips of anything.
All right. Whatever, so
life tips, business tips, anything.
So my life and business tip, which is one that I learned from Emily Charles, is spend as little money as possible. And that doesn't mean be cheap or buy the cheapest thing, but do it as cost effectively as you possibly can. It applies to absolutely everything and anything.
Nice. Number one. I like that.
Interesting.
What have you got?
Mine would be spend more money than you think you need to. I think we're very much two ends of a spectrum on that. I am very, very frugal, perhaps my northern soul. And Jimmy is perhaps at one time was...
not true.
The opposite, yeah. And we've met somewhere in the middle, which is probably a good thing. I guess we challenge each other on that. Sometimes I will persevere through a situation that could be made much simpler by not even spending that much more money. And before, I've been very reluctant to do it. And Jimmy has definitely been a good influence in some ways of just like literally just fucking buy that thing. It costs a tenner and it's literally going to make your life like 20 times easier, you know? And also I can be like, yeah, Jimmy, we don't need to spend that. We can do it a lot cheaper. So, you know, you kind of, yeah. So what's the advice there? Spend maybe more or maybe less money than you think you need to.
but from it's it, like in life, obviously it makes a huge difference, but particularly for the business, you know, like we've always from as long as we've been going, it's always been a case of just don't spend money. You know, like if for every pound that we spend that isn't on kit is potentially money lost. So we always just go like, well, is there a cheaper way of doing this? Is there a way that we can do it for free? Is there a way that we can do it that actually has benefits in other things as well? Rather than just going like, yep, that's something that costs 500 quid, bam, done, next, bam, done, next. And before you know it, you spent all your money.
Yeah, that's wise. Go on, hit me next.
Tip. My tip would be general life advice. Not that I feel that I'm any sort of authority to give life advice, really. My tip would be don't take life advice of people that think that
on podcasts.
I would say a general tip would be don't feel self-conscious or inhibited from doing something because you're worried about what other people think of you. Because I think generally people are so bothered about themselves and what people think of them that they're not looking at you. Like everyone's almost in a spiral of like, God, what if I, you know, whether it's like not going to the gym because you feel like you get like sweaty and red faced, or, you know, not doing karaoke because you're tone deaf or whatever it is. Like people who don't do it, it's because they feel like other people will judge them. But I feel like everyone is actually so bothered about themselves and whether they look cool that they're more like introspective. I think one of the most freeing things is realizing that no one really gives a shit about you, and it can be quite liberating. So you can kind of just, I mean, unless you've got like loads of followers and people actually like give a damn, but most of us don't, you know what I mean? So like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Nice. Well, I like
that. That's kind of the fundamentals of no rules though, isn't it? You know, like just that kind of being like, well, if you want to not shave your legs, then don't fucking shave your legs.
I like that. I'm going to class that as three down now. So there's two more.
Gosh, two more. Okay. I have a tip. This is a cooking tip.
Good. I like cooking tips.
Dot cubes make everything 27% better, I would say. Like, if you're making something and it's tasting like crap, and this is a good thing for actually, you know, not wasting food at this point, having to like make stuff from home more, all of that kind of good stuff, just add a stock cube and it will probably make it better. That's my rule when cooking.
Unless it's dessert.
Yes. Although, like,
there's got to be some form of vegetable
kind of thing. I don't know. Maybe there's a place for it. I don't know.
No.
There's got to be like some kind of like dessert orientated stock cube out there. If there isn't, there's a market for it, and we need to make
it. Or the sugar cube.
Oh yeah, good point. Sugar cube.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Got one more.
So the last piece of advice, we will alternate words.
Okay. Yes, because it's 2.5. So you start.
Okay.
You
should
always
go
left
when
the
postman
wears
red.
Bam. You should always go left when the postman wears red.
I like it.
And that's a kind of, it's a philosophical one. It's, you know, like red sky at night, shepherd's delight. It's that kind of thing, you know?
Like postman, like that could mean something else as well.
Yeah.
The bearer of
I like
you.
That.
Yes.
Red, it, red might not even mean red. It might mean blue.
Exactly.
And left might mean right.
And it might also mean up or down.
Exactly. Exactly.
Shit, man, this has got deep.
Don't ever listen to life advice from us. That's probably the moral of the story.
Have you given your life tips yet?
Nope, and I'm not doing it until I have had a bit of time to think about it. Maybe I don't know. Maybe like so. I've got so to put into perspective. This is, I can't even speak. To put it into perspective, this is episode 7, I think. I'm not sure. I'm gonna go with it saying it's episode 7. So I then have this week episode 8, 9, 10, and 11 to record this week. They're all planned.
Nice.
They're pretty cool. There's, in fact, all the other four are really, really cool. I'm really looking forward to them. But the majority of the reason why I've got four more to record this week is because I had laptop geddon last week where I didn't have a laptop, so I had to reschedule everything.
Yeah.
So maybe when I've done those four, I might do a podcast of myself giving some bollocks chat. And I might just literally call it
Chris Hall Talks.
Chris Hall Talks Bollocks Chat Podcast.
That sounds like my kind of podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it could be quite funny if I just put a mic in front of myself with a bottle of whiskey and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I don't drink very often, so it could be hilarious.
Yeah.
A few energy gels and an espresso.
Yeah, I mean, that's another option as well. Peanut butter, jar of peanut butter, that could be fun.
Yeah.
I feel like drinking is more acceptable now because we're all sort of stuck inside. I feel like we don't drink that much. I mean, not that I'm saying like promoting like binge drinking or anything, but I feel like our alcohol consumption's gone up. Well, mine has like 200%.
Yeah, I mean, I
commit to it, but
I mean, I know you guys very rarely drink. I very, very rarely drink as well, and I think I've had a few. I've definitely had one whiskey night, and I've definitely had a couple of shared a couple of bottles of red wine.
Mm.
So like I don't think it's a bad thing. Like when you can't, you're just trying to find things to do, aren't you? Like I think I'm going to complete Netflix in the next week. So
yeah.
I'm then going to move on to Amazon Prime, and I'm going to complete Amazon Prime.
Yeah,
we completed both last week.
Oh God! Oh, you should watch if you want Amazon Prime. You should watch. Is it called Hunters? The one with Al Pacino in.
My dad's just told me to watch that.
That's good.
It's really good.
Is it?
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, for me, it went a bit less good in the middle, but it gets really, really good at the end.
Okay, that's a good tip. My dad told me to watch that one last night. I was texting him last night. The crazy bastard. He's 60 now.
Happy birthday!
And he's just retired. Yeah, he's just retired.
Good stuff.
And I said to him, why are you retiring? And he was like, I'll do the politer version of what he said. He basically said, I'm an old fuck and I'm fat and I want to enjoy my life a bit and get a bit fitter and not have to be so stressed out working. And then the next part of that conversation was his job basically gave him a really good like redundancy package to retire, or retirement package, redundancy package, I don't know what you call it, I guess retirement package. They gave him a really good like retirement package because he's been considering it for a while, and he accepted it. And then they said to him like, oh, if you want to like work on a like on a ad hoc basis, like as and when you want to, you're more than welcome to, because he's very good at his job. And he just turned around and he was like, well, while this corona bollocks is going on, I'm staying the fuck at home.
Yeah.
And I was like, fair. Because like similarly to your dad, my dad's a high risk person. So he's just like, I just don't want to be outside. I don't want to risk it. I just want to go out as little as I can and enjoy being at home and completing Netflix and Amazon Prime and whatever other streaming options there are in the world.
Sounds like my kind of guy.
This is it, absolutely. Yeah. But this is the thing. Like, you know, it is absolutely the correct way to go about it. But I think, like, even, you know, we are young and fit, but I think, number one, you can't assume that you're going to be fine. But also, number two, it doesn't mean that you can kind of just go out and potentially, like, spread things. Like, we might have it and have absolutely no symptoms and then be sort of going around and, you know, going to shops every day and kind of putting it elsewhere for other people to pick up. So it's kind of, it's the same for everyone, whether you're, like, 60 or whether you're 20, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, my attitude of how I've been trying to treat the situation is to act as if I do have it.
Yeah.
And therefore minimize my time outside as much as I can. It's purely keeping it to the utmost minimum. And therefore, I feel like I'm doing my bit to be safe. Like, my mum got quite funny about the fact that I didn't want to go down to see her for Mother's Day. And I was like, come on. Like, yeah. Be sensible about this. As much as I'd love to see you, it's not the wisest thing to be doing in the current climate. But hey ho, that's life. We'll deal with the cards we've been dealt with, and things will get better at some point.
Absolutely. And in the meantime, yeah. There's always, I don't know, Zwift.
There's always Zwift, yeah. I mean, I think I'm going to complete Zwift soon.
Are you? we should do some Zwift rides.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's organise them.
Like, I actually have no idea how to use Zwift. I'm a bit of a Zwift noob, but you can do group rides, right? I'm sure I've seen people like, hey, come on my group ride.
Yeah, you can do group. They're really easy to set up, actually, because I was looking at doing them the other day. You basically, like, you can only invite the people that follow you or you follow. I can't remember what way around it is, but right. But it's a group ride of your mates, basically, which is kind of what you want, isn't it?
Yeah. Because last year we actually did a series of group rides, didn't we? Like actual real life outdoor ones.
Real life indoor ones.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe we could do something similar.
Yeah, do it.
Do you put headphones on Zwift? Like
do
a
I?
Like on? Is that a thing? Can you like chat to people?
Yeah, you can as well. There's you can download some. I don't know what it's called, but there's some like app thing which people use to talk. Otherwise, you can talk through the actual companion app. There's a typing part to the companion app.
Yeah,
but there's something that a lot of people talk about that they've downloaded, which allows you to wear a Britney Spears microphone and talk to people.
Amazing.
That's so weird, isn't it? Like, oh yeah, I'm coming past. Fucking hell.
Hold your line, mate. Hold your line.
I can't. I don't control my line.
Right, I'm gonna wrap it there because this is 1 hour and 7 minutes.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's a good time to wrap it. So thank you so much, Jimmy and Emily and Jimmy, for your time.
No problem.
And for giving us a bit of Atticus insight. I think, like, for me, it's always interesting to hear what you guys are up to, and I miss you. Can I come up when this shit goes down? Or can you come down when this shit's done? Because it's been too long. I'm going to stop it there.
Cool.
We miss you too.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for chatting.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. Say bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.